unfortunately, to see that the suspect in Dayton had this history of intimidating and threatening people that he knew.
I want to get to what seems to have held back so many Democratic and maybe Republican legislators at state level and in Congress, and that is the power of the NRA pouring money into elections. Apparently, they poured less money in November than, you know, the gun control groups, but now also are going through a massive spasm, a kind of implosion. Can you talk about what has happened at the NRA?
Sure. So the NRA is in very deep crisis. It went from the apogee of its powers in 2016, when it spent more than any other single special interest group to back President Trump and congressional Republicans' election efforts, to a deep fiscal crisis, accusations of profound corruption at the top of the organization and self-dealing, not to mention just run-of-the-mill financial mismanagement. Longtime figures in the group, like Chris Cox, who was the top lobbyist and was widely seen as the likely next leader of the group, were forced out, as well as a number of board members. Basically, this all stems from some reporting by my colleague Mike Spies and many other reporters that found that for a long time, the group has had an unusually close relationship with its top vendor, which is an ad firm called Ackerman McQueen that has worked with the NRA since the late 80s, basically as long as Wayne LaPierre has been in charge. And it's very difficult to say where the NRA began and where the NRA ended and Ackerman McQueen ended, and Ackerman McQueen began. A lot of figures who were sort of some of the most well-known public faces of the NRA, such as Dana Loesch, were actually Ackerman McQueen employees who worked on behalf of the NRA through projects like NRA TV, which is now shut down. Basically, the group's accountants and some board members found out that there was no due diligence being performed on these contracts, which had ballooned to $40 million a year.
We have 20 seconds.
And those who have raised concerns about it have been forced out of the organization.
We're going to do part two of this conversation, put online at democracynow.org. But this seems to be a key moment for gun control groups. I mean, you even have the New York Post front page today as you were coming here at Democracy Now! You might have seen ban weapons of war. And we're going to talk more about that at democracynow.org. Alex Yablon, reporter at The Trace. His most recent piece will link to mass shootings are destroying our sense of public space. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial 2019 on Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza in Portland. This year, the annual Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial event is focused on the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, and we'll explore the disproportionate impacts that nuclear weapons have on women, children, indigenous communities, and communities of color. Again, that's Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial 2019, the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, on Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial 2019 on Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza in Portland. This year, the annual Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial event is focused on the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, and we'll explore the disproportionate impacts that nuclear weapons have on women, children, indigenous communities, and communities of color. Again, that's Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial 2019, The Unequal Impacts of Nuclear Weapons on Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feminist Film Night and Planned Parenthood fundraiser on Friday, August 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. This Planned Parenthood fundraiser will screen A Girl Like Her, which tells the hidden history of over a million young women who became pregnant in the 1950s and 60s and were banished to maternity homes to give birth and surrender their babies for adoption. And Jane, an Abortion Service, a documentary of Jane, the Chicago-based women's health group who performed nearly 12,000 safe illegal abortions between 1969 and 1973. There will be a conversation after the films between a former Jane, Judith Arcana, and a girl like her, Lonnie Jo Lee. Again, that's the Feminist Film Night and Planned Parenthood fundraiser on Friday, August 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. You are tuned in to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. Cecil and Celeste, your hosts, are not in today. They're having the day off, and so I am filling in. I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Good morning. It's been a long weekend. Let's just say it. It's been a very, very long weekend for, well, everybody. Our guest today is actually going to be talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons. Tomorrow there is an event at the Japanese American Historical Plaza. And so we'll be talking to Shantini from the Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Oregon chapter. But I feel like we can't really get into that without acknowledging what happened this weekend in El Paso and in Dayton. It's horrific. It's something that I think all of us are probably thinking about, or maybe you're not thinking about it because you don't want to have to think about it and you can't help but thinking about it because it is more than concerning. I'm just going to put it that way. First, we'll give out the phone number because I know you probably have something to say. You're probably thinking about something. 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. Before we start talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, I'm going to give everyone 1 minute. If you got something to say, you got something to feel that you need to talk about on air, maybe you want to talk about what you're doing to protect your community, or maybe you want to talk about how you feel like you can't protect your community through all this domestic terrorism, and we'll see how all of these cases are charged because they like to call them hate crimes instead of terrorism, domestic terrorism. But let's face it, that's how I think most people feel, especially if you're from a community of color, when we see these people putting out these manifestos that is just about whiteness, right? It's about the superiority of whiteness, or how they feel about the superiority of whiteness. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. You know, I find it interesting that we're going to be talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, because when I woke up this morning, I thought, what should we talk about on More Talk Radio today? I have this guest coming in, but these events happened this weekend. Do we ignore, you know, talking about the event because we need to be talking about this other thing? But, you know, the reality is that they are all the same problem, right? It's all about how you can just take these groups of people, if you're those people who are thinking that your race is superior, and you look at other people and say, those people, they are different, so therefore they don't deserve to live. Whether it's a gun, apparently you can get assault rifles in this country, or whether it's a nuclear weapon, the impact is always going to be different based on your race, unfortunately. And as a person who is not of the white race, Yeah, I've been going through a lot of feelings this weekend, and a lot of compassion or fear for communities that are not mine, because right now my community is not the one being targeted, and it's horrific to know that other communities are being targeted. I've seen my community get targeted as well. So let's support those communities that are the ones that are being targeted right now. 503-231-8187. No one's really calling right now, so great. I'm glad that people aren't calling, because maybe this hopefully means that you feel safe. I don't know. I know my community doesn't feel safe. I know it was a lot of discussion this weekend. And since no one's calling in, maybe you just don't want to have to talk about it on air, because I don't really want to have to talk about it on air. I know I should be wanting to talk about it on air because it's radio and I'm just like ranting right now because I don't know even what to say anymore. How do we talk about these things anymore? How do we, when we see that there's been more mass shootings in the United States than there are days here this year? That is terrifying. And this means that the normalization of it, when we see the way that the press is covering, I don't know, just like this morning when I woke up and I looked at the news, that's the first thing I do, and I expected all this coverage. Oh, one thing I expected to see that I didn't see, or I was hoping to see, was the president, Sir Trump, saying actually something helpful. But he hasn't said, oh, I think he was going to say something at 10 a.m., and that's probably on the East Coast time. But hey, it's Monday. We had to wait till Monday to hear from a president. Not surprising. Let's just get into it. Let's just talk about the president who's also not helping our next problem. Let's just welcome Sean, because Sean is sitting here with me, watching me rant. We've been ranting before we went on air. Just about what is the unequal impact that violence and that white supremacy contributes towards communities of colors, when we're talking about just any marginalized people, really. So, Sean, Denny, thanks for just watching me rant for the last
few thanks
minutes.
So much for having me. I appreciate it.
I apologize that, you know, this is this show you're coming on to this morning, but you're talking about something extremely, extremely important. Tomorrow at the Japanese American Historical Plaza, that's Tuesday, August 6th, from 6 to 7 p.m., the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility will be talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, with tomorrow being the memorial for Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So can we just talk about what, just off the bat, unequal impacts of nuclear weapons. What does that mean? When people say, "What do you mean?" You know, a bomb drops and everyone dies that gets bombed. So, what does that look like?
Sure. Well, it certainly is true that when nuclear weapons are used, everyone suffers. These aren't weapons that are designed to protect anyone. They make everyone. They threaten everyone. They threaten the entire globe. They threaten the survival of all life on the planet. But when we talk about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, what we mean is that all through the entire toxic life cycle of nuclear weapons, from the time that uranium is mined, the production of the weapons, the testing of the weapons, and of course the use of the weapons, this always disproportionately impacts women, children, indigenous communities, and communities of color, and that's what our event tomorrow is going to be sort of focusing on. So, for example, when uranium mining happens, it almost always happens on stolen indigenous lands. When nuclear weapons are tested, most of the U.S. nuclear weapons testing went on in the Pacific Islands and the Marshall Islands. A lot of the people in the Marshall Islands are still suffering from the health effects and the sort of social impacts of this horrific testing all through the Cold War. And just from a very basic biological standpoint, women and children are much more negatively impacted by exposure to ionizing radiation. So in any event of either testing or just mining the material themselves, of course, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, when the bombs were dropped, most of the victims there were innocent women and children. And so all through the entire history of nuclear weapons, there's always been a disproportionate impact on people of color and women and children. And I think it's something that we'll be exploring tomorrow. And it's something that I think a lot of people don't think about. They don't think about sort of the racist element of nuclear weapons, or they don't think about the gendered element of nuclear weapons. And it's something that we want to bring to people's attention tomorrow.
You know, oftentimes, yeah, I've heard this discussion about the unequal impact, but it is always a discussion about how it's about the history. You know, that's a historical thing, because the testing that happened, we tend to think about the Marshall Islands, like you were speaking about. And I don't always think that people bring in the perspective that this is still a problem where, yes, nuclear weapons are a problem for all of us, but that how it the impact is still very much unequal. And so can you talk how it is currently impacting communities that are marginalized today in an unequal way?
Well, sure. Well, I mean, there's still, you know, uranium mining on indigenous mm-hmm. lands around the world, in Australia and in Central Africa and in parts of Canada, again, almost exclusively on indigenous lands. You know, here in our own region, to bring it sort of more to a local level, there's the Hanford Nuclear Reservation out in Richland, Washington. It's just about 4 hours from Portland. It's on the Columbia River. It's the most contaminated site in the Western Hemisphere because of nuclear weapons production. That's actually where the bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki, the materials for that bomb were enriched at Hanford. And a lot of people in the area, they're called Hanford Downwinders, and we're actually very honored to have a Hanford Downwinder, Patricia Hoover, joining us as a speaker tomorrow. And she's going to talk about some of the impacts that, as a woman, that exposure to that toxic pollution, both radioactive materials and toxic heavy metals, which are used in the enrichment process. She's going to talk about the impacts that has had on her health and the health of people in her community. And again, because of the nature of ionizing radiation, it does tend to affect women differently. It has to do with the amount of reproductive tissues, which is much more sensitive to ionizing radiation. And of course, children, as they're developing, if you are exposed to radiation, you have cellular mutation, and it disrupts the growth process. So, you know, this is something that's very much a real thing. And in terms of, you know, right now, generally, whenever we're talking about storing nuclear waste, we don't store it in rich white neighborhoods. We store it in poor communities of color. We store it on indigenous lands. There's so much talk about Yucca Mountain. Of course, again, that's an indigenous land. That's a sacred land to the people who were there for thousands of years before we said, hey, let's make a bunch of bombs and put this highly radioactive material on their sacred lands and literally poison them for the next couple of tens of thousands of years to make this land generally uninhabitable. And I think it's a real disgrace. And I think it really does tie into the sort of inherently racist element that was involved in the production of nuclear weapons, right now in the storage of nuclear materials. And of course, generally when we threaten to use nuclear weapons, at least from the United States, we don't generally tend to talk about targeting other white countries, predominantly white countries. We generally save that threat for countries where people are predominantly non-white.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. Season Celeste are off for the day. I'm your guest host, Jenny Yokoyama, and I am speaking with Sean Tinney from the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons. Tomorrow, there is an event at the Japanese American Historical Plaza being hosted by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, as tomorrow is the Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial. We have a caller on the line. Let's take George's call real quick. George, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you folks today?
It's been a bit of a harrowing weekend for all of us. What's on your mind?
I was reading a book by Chris Hedges a few months ago. The book is titled The World as It Is, Dispatches of the Myth, on the Myth of Human Progress. And Hedges was talking about violence, personal and mass violence, as a discipline of study in psychology. And he says that around the time of Sigmund Freud and Walter Lippmann back in the 19-teens, they became aware that public relations, the use of mass psychology to manipulate the public mind, was a powerful tool. And this, I think, has been carried on into the nuclear age by the United States, which, despite the opinion of a few well-informed people in 1945, decided to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki with atomic bombs. And what was the U.S. doing? Was the U.S. basically continuing what Chris Hedges talks about was discovered before World War I and was outlined in Walter Lippmann's book, Public Opinion, about how easily the public mind can be manipulated for intentions of violence. And I wonder, there have been plenty of people who've wondered about the U.S. continued use of nuclear weapons, and Russia's too. And so I just wonder if mass psychology isn't a subject that should be part of our reflections on this. And I'll get off the line. I want to listen to what everyone who calls in and you have to say about the issues you are raising. And thank you very much.
Thank you, George. Sean, do you have any thoughts about what George has had to say?
Yeah, well, George, I think you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, when we look at nuclear weapons, these weapons are designed for one purpose, which is the destruction of life. And I think that's a tough sell for most living organisms. The way I kind of think of nuclear weapons is, if you wouldn't see a bunch of mice get together and build a giant mousetrap, and that's essentially what we've done with nuclear weapons. And a lot of psychology and a lot of propaganda has been involved in that. And when we look at World War II, we see the propaganda around nuclear weapons, which was starkly racist against the Japanese people. It was dehumanizing. And I think this psychology of dehumanization on the part of people in power, and when I say in power, I'm really talking about the people who are benefiting economically from the production of nuclear weapons. They have to go to great lengths to convince people that these weapons, which again are designed to kill people, they have to really go to great lengths to convince people that these are something that's worthwhile to the tune of spending $1.3 trillion over the next decade to upgrade our nuclear weapons arsenal. Now, to me, that's a really tough sell, and the only way that you can sell that is through lies and through fear and through pandering to these deep-seated racist fears, which happened at the end of World War II, and we're seeing it again in some of the dehumanizing language towards places like North Korea and Iran. So, yeah, I think psychology is absolutely a part of it. It's the psychology of we have to be afraid of the other, and we have to be heavily armed just in case the other guy does something. And I think it's inherently anti-human, it's inhumane, and looking at it from a psychological perspective, I think will give us certain insights into the reason that we're in this situation where we're about to spend another $1.3 trillion over the next decade.
It's something I always think about when it comes to the propaganda that we have here in the United States, is this idea that the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki ended the war, right? We've been constantly being given this rhetoric that it quote-unquote did something good, that it actually saved lives in the long run. Can you talk a little bit about that propaganda that we've heard? Do nuclear bombs... Is that a myth?
I mean, I would say that's exactly what it is. It's a myth. There was a mythology that, you know, these things were absolutely necessary to end the war. If we look at the people who were involved in planning the war, they knew better. They knew that the war was already coming to an end. Japan had made formal overtures of surrender that the United States rejected. Nazi Germany was in decline. Hitler was dead. And really the reason that we dropped these weapons was kind of twofold. We had spent a bunch of money making them, producing them. We couldn't just sort of let that money go to waste. But the real reason I think that we bombed the innocent civilians of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was to show Russia that we were the new superpower on the block. We were the new military and economic superpower. And so more than ending the war, it was a way to start the new war, which was the Cold War. And I think more than ending World War II, the idea that the United States had in developing and deploying these weapons was to establish military hegemony, and we've seen the results of that. We've seen this the state arise where you have these two giant nuclear armed nations, the United States and Russia, and through this kind of mythology of mutually assured destruction, which tells the lie that we're not going to use these because we're afraid the other people will use them. I think that conflict, that nuclear armed conflict, has been the reason that so many proxy wars have been spawned in Vietnam, in Afghanistan. So I think we've seen the result of this detente, this conflict between these two nuclear armed nations spill out into all this into all these other conflicts. So it's absolutely tied into each other. The development of these weapons, I think, was one of the darkest chapters. And here we are 74 years later, and the threat of nuclear annihilation hangs over our head just as it did 74 years ago.
We have another caller. We have Mike. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning, Mike. What's on your mind?
Bruce, how do you pronounce your name?
Our guest this morning is Sean Tinney from the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility.
And what was your name again?
My name is Jenna.
Jenna, well, good to know you. All right, I just wanted to, the bombs that they bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki with were atomic bombs. I mean, first off, we're talking about a subject that is so crazy, how mankind could sink so low to, it's just pitiful, but I'm not going to digress on that. We all know what's going on there. Okay, but they added this little golf ball to baseball size thing of boron in them, and so what we have now are these hydrogen bombs. And can Sean maybe talk about, if he knows anything about the difference between, I read a book about a fellow that was at both Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and he got direct radiation. He still lived to be a long time, but it just destroyed his chromosomes. He had nothing but problems the rest of his life. But could he talk about the difference between the hydrogen and the atomic bomb and the effect that it has, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Thanks for your question.
I'm going to take it off the air, but thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. So I think the thing to really say here is, yes, hydrogen bombs are a type of nuclear weapon, and really the state of nuclear weapons now are, each one of these bombs are sometimes between 10 to 30 times stronger than the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So the technology of nuclear weapons has, sad to say, has really grown. So the destructive capability of these bombs has increased exponentially. If one nuclear weapon were used today, it would be a very different story than what happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're talking global, the end of human civilization. There's a really great report from PSR National that was put out a few years ago that kind of did an analysis it's a horrible thing to say, but a best case scenario of a so-called limited nuclear conflict. The example that this report, Nuclear Famine, looked at was a small-scale exchange between nuclear-armed India and Pakistan. And even in a very limited, exchange of these nuclear weapons, sort of a best case scenario where just a few are fired before there's something that stops the sort of chain reaction, which is a natural thing to expect from nuclear weapons. This report found that because of, even with this limited use of these incredibly powerful weapons that are around nowadays, it would cause severe disruption of the climate. It would kick up all this dust into the atmosphere. And we're looking at about 2 billion people dying, not just from the bomb blast itself and the nuclear fallout and the radiation and all, but because of the disruption of food production. This would radically change the Earth's environment. And we're looking at massive starvation, massive death. And again, this is not just the people in the countries where the bombs dropped. And I think that's something that I want to really, really key in on with nuclear weapons. There is no us versus them with nuclear weapons. It's just us versus us with nuclear weapons. They're designed to kill human beings. We're all human beings, regardless of our differences, regardless of the country we live in. Once these things start flying, we all start dying. No matter where we are on the globe, there is no one safe from nuclear weapons. And I don't mean to make people afraid when I say that, because there is hope. There are people doing a lot of work, including Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, my organization, as well as that we have some great political leaders who are really trying hard to get rid of these nuclear weapons, to defund them, to deconstruct them, and to stop this madness, this self-destructive death march that we've set ourselves on. So there is hope, because a lot of people are working diligently to get rid of these weapons, and we've seen some significant progress. Here in Oregon, just in the last legislative session, we passed Senate Joint Memorial 5, which puts the state of Oregon on record as supporting nuclear weapons abolition. 2 years ago, the United Nations passed the humanitarian ban on nuclear weapons. So all of the countries that have signed on to that agree to never produce nuclear weapons, to never ever store nuclear weapons or test them. I think 122 nations signed on at the UN for that. So we've seen some real growth. Of course, the holdouts are these big nuclear armed countries, and I would say that the reason behind that is that a lot of people are making a lot of money on these weapons, and it imperils all of us across the face of the globe so that a small group of rich people can have slightly bigger mansions and yachts.
Can we talk a little bit about that capitalism aspect of it? And the direct capitalistic gain, I guess, that we get here in the Pacific Northwest. I know that in a previous conversation we had had, you were talking about Boeing and their connection to these weapons. Can you expound upon that a bit?
Well, yeah, Boeing is one of the companies that I call them nuclear profiteers. There are quite a few of them because they make components that are, you know, essential to the delivery system of these bombs. And there are a lot of companies that are really heavily invested in nuclear weapons technology. Some of them are names that you'd recognize, like General Electric. And some of them are things that you might not think about, like Bank of America and Wells Fargo and Chase and Citibank. A lot of the big financial institutions make money off of nuclear weapons investments. And I think people who are concerned with that, look at where your money goes. Look at where your, if you have stocks, what are you investing in? Are you investing in companies that are making money on imperiling the survival of the human species and most of the rest of life on the surface of the planet as well? And if you're interested in finding out specifically, there's a great website called don'tbankonthebomb.com, and you can look and see exactly which companies are involved in nuclear weapons investment. And if you are, say, if you bank with Bank of America, I would encourage you to look at where that money goes and who is harmed by your investment in that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Jenny Yokoyama. My guest this morning is Sean Tinney from the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, and we're talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons. Tomorrow, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility will be talking about this some more at their event at the Japanese American Historical Plaza from 6 to 7 p.m. Tomorrow marks the memorial for the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombing that happened in 1945, 75 years ago, yet we are we're still talking about this. Or I guess that's the beginning of this conversation, unfortunately. So, let's see. We have another call. We have another mic, a different mic. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What's your thoughts this morning?
Well, when you first started out, you were talking about racism and how this society targets basically non-white people. I just wanted to say one part of Nagasaki and Hiroshima is that the Japanese was in partnership with Germany, which at the time was a racist society, and they were part of the aggression. And so when America dropped bombs on them, that's no different than what they were doing against Germany. So you left out the aspect that the Japanese people was allies of a racist organization. And plus, there's a difference between genocide and imperialism. When racism is used for genocide, like Native Americans or Jewish people, that's a whole different type of mechanism than imperialism, because imperialism is destroying a capitalistic or political type of system. It has nothing to do with people's ethnic. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention when you talk about racism and genocide. You don't even talk about genocide, but you talk about nuclear weapons. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, I absolutely acknowledge that the Nazi army and Imperial Japan did a lot of very horrible things during the war. I think really what bothers me about the use of nuclear weapons in World War II were both Hiroshima and Nagasaki were civilian population centers. These bombs are designed for civilians. They're not designed for combatants. They're not designed to drop on armies. They're designed to drop on cities. And so there again, I was speaking earlier about this mythology that this ended the war. The war was already drawing to an end. Nazi Germany had been defeated. The Japanese army had already made formal overtures of surrender. And so it in no way would I ever discount the horrible things that the Japanese Imperial Army did. There was a lot of real atrocities committed by that army. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what we can do as Americans is look at our own atrocities. You know, we can't say, oh, you know, they did something horrible. And so what do we do back? We create this bomb that is indiscriminate weapon of mass murder. I don't think that's an appropriate response to evil on one side, is to say, well, we're going to do something that's equally evil, if not more evil, as a response to that. There's got to be a better way for humans to get by in this world.
We have Mark on the line. Mark, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to make a comment in regard to the one and only time that a nuclear weapon has been deployed acted as a deterrent. We're here 75 years later, and a nuclear weapon has not been used again. So, in fact, you know, the use and demonstration of that weapon put a lid on the kinds of totality that were on display during World War II. And I think it's all in the context of how you look at it. And secondly, I wanted to make a comment about race. Racism exists all around the world, whether it's Hutus and Tutsis killing one another, Sikhs and Hindus killing one another, Bosnians and Serbs. It's a human condition. And it's got nothing to do with white people doing something to somebody else. It's part of the human condition. So I wish we would frame our comments about racism in a more, you know, global perspective, instead of, you know, targeting and whitewashing, forgive the pun, you know, white people into one great group that is the, you know, purveyor of all evils, and in particular, the development of nuclear weapons at the time was in response to an arms race, you know, within the context of World War II. So you kind of have to put this conversation in the context of what was happening at the time, who were the players. The Germans were, you know, coming up with new and different weapons like the V2s that were terrorizing Europe, and this was our response. And the Japanese were not anywhere near, you know, surrender at the time we deployed those bombs. In fact, we were contemplating a land invasion of Japan that was going to cost upwards of 500,000 American lives. And Truman made the decision to deploy the bomb, and I thought it was a courageous decision, and ended up ultimately bringing the Japanese to surrender. So those are my comments.
Well, thank you for your call. I'm just going to say that, you know, we are talking about the unequal impact. Okay, let us not forget about where, as Sean pointed out at the beginning of this conversation, about where was the testing taking place, right? Who do we actually see unequally impacted by these weapons? That's what we're talking about when it comes to the mining, when it comes to who do we actually see who are taking the fallout, you know, pun I guess intended there, of these weapons. And so when we don't acknowledge the reality, yes, nuclear weapons will affect everyone, including white people, including people of every race. But when we actually see who has had to take the negative impacts so far, we can't help but notice, especially if you're from a community of color, maybe you'll notice that your community has been impacted more than those who maybe come from a white community, right? So to ignore the reality is to not look at the entirety and the complexity of the situation. And when we do that, then we don't lead ourselves towards a path, and this is all just my opinion, but I like to think I'm right, of how we actually go towards our steps of solving the problem. I think it is a disservice to not acknowledge communities of color that are unequally impacted. That is what Sean is here talking about. That's why they're having a whole event tomorrow to talk about this. Sean, some thoughts?
I mean, absolutely. As you just said, there has historically been an incredibly disproportionate impact on people of color. You know, nuclear weapons do threaten everyone, regardless of race, regardless of the country that you live in. The weapons are so strong these days that there is no us versus them with nuclear weapons. It's complete destruction. And what I heard was a repetition of some of the, what I would say, the propaganda and the mythology that surrounded the use of nuclear weapons, this idea that this prevented a much greater loss of life. And I think if you look at some of the original source materials, some of the people who were involved in the planning of the war, I think they knew better. And there have been a few statements made by some of the people involved at the highest levels that acknowledged that these weapons weren't necessary to end the war, that they had been developed and they were being deployed, even though there were alternatives. There were alternatives to 74 years of living under the shadow of nuclear weapons and the shadow of nuclear annihilation for all life on the planet. There were better strategies. We know that the war was coming to an end, and that nuclear weapons weren't necessary. They weren't the period at the end of this war. And I think that's just the propaganda that was used to sell these weapons to the American people and to make it okay what we did to the civilians of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I think that mythology that came up around it of like, oh, this prevented this huge ground war, you know, again, that would have been a choice too, and it would have been a horrible choice as well. But I think if the only alternative to ending a conflict is creating 74 years of existential crisis, which I think anybody who really understands the threat of nuclear weapons will understand that it is an existential crisis to all life on Earth, that's no kind of solution.
We have Eric next in our caller queue. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm kind of going to the micro level right now. Now they're talking about cosmic rays affecting our voting machines and the other end of the spectrum. Hello?
Yes. What? I'm sorry. Can you connect your question back to our topic today of the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons?
I'm just saying that it's very ironic that they're talking about that on the other end of the spectrum.
Okay, well, Eric, thank you for your call. We'll talk about that on another week, but right now we are talking about nuclear weapons, how they are still proliferating on this planet, and if a nuclear war starts, guess what? Voting machines will be the least of our concern, although that is definitely a concern we have in modern American politics. So thank you for your concern, Eric. We got Michael next on the line. Michael? Michael, yes, Michael, what's your thoughts this morning?
Okay, two thoughts. About the racist targeting of Japan, the reason we didn't drop those nukes on Germany was that Germany had collapsed and been defeated before they were ready. We would have dropped them on Germany if we had been still fighting Germany in August of 1945, but they collapsed in, like, what is it, April of 1945? So that was one comment I wanted to make. And the other one was, there's a lot of, you guys have talked a lot about the bad effects of nuclear weapons, but there was one very positive effect of nuclear weapons, which is that I grew up in the 1940s and 50s, we would have had World War III with the Soviet Union if it were not for nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons was what kept that war from happening because both sides were too afraid to fight it. And if you look at what the cost of World War III with the Soviet Union would have been, even if it was just fought with conventional weapons, it would have been far worse than anything you could pin on nuclear weapons.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. Sean, thoughts about that?
Well, again, I mean, I think that's the line that we've been told to make what happened with the development of nuclear weapons palatable to the American people. It was sold as, okay, this is going to prevent the ground invasion of Japan. This is going to prevent World War III. And I don't see a lot of evidence to point in that direction to say that, you know, there was necessarily going to be a giant war with Russia and this sort of myth of mutually assured destruction is the only thing that's kept us from going to war with each other on a large scale. I don't see any historical antecedent to say that that's actually factually true. And I know, too, that, you know, the United States and Russia have been fighting a series of wars all through the Cold War, Vietnam, Afghanistan. A lot of the aggression between these two countries has continued to play out. I don't see any, again, historical evidence to suggest that there would have necessarily been a World War III between the United States and Russia had it not been for the development of nuclear weapons. And I think this idea, this mad idea, the mutually assured destruction idea, was something that really made it okay for a lot of people all through the Cold War to say, okay, well, these weapons are morally defensible because they're keeping us from a greater war with Russia. And I think we've gotten to the point now where we have such a huge stockpile of nuclear weapons, somewhere around 13,850, all of those bombs, way stronger than Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs. A handful of them would be enough to wipe out, most life on the planet. And I think we've literally put ourselves, we've boxed ourselves in with these weapons. And it's amazing to me that that one of these weapons hasn't been used on a large-scale conflict since then. There's a lot of work by a lot of people to make sure that doesn't happen. And then the possibility that these weapons will so-called fall into the wrong hands, whether that's a stateless terrorism or a state that is okay with using these because they feel backed into a corner. Or
a president who possibly enjoys the rhetoric.
Yeah, or exactly. All it takes is the push of a couple of buttons to eliminate most life on the planet. I don't think that's a tenable situation for the human species. I think it's incumbent upon us to look at a new way forward, a way forward where we don't have the shadow of nuclear weapons hanging over us, where there isn't the idea that, well, we have to have these or they're going to kill us, and that then makes them want to have them, and it's just a growing cycle of violence. And I think there's got to be a point where you say, all right, or how do we step out of this cycle of violence? Because we've essentially gotten to the point with technology, the development of this nuclear weapons technology, that we imperil all life on the planet. It's not like we're going to send bombs over there, eliminate our enemy, and we're going to be all smiles and thumbs up on this side. That's not how nuclear weapons work. If they start using them, if we start using them, it doesn't matter. The way that the trade winds work, once this radiation gets into the atmosphere, it's going to proliferate across the globe. So there is no us versus them with nuclear weapons. I want to stress that again. These weapons are designed to kill human beings, regardless of their state, regardless of their race, regardless of their gender. But again, we've seen all through the mining of this material, from the testing of this material in the Pacific Islands, from the testing in the United States on indigenous lands. We've seen this incredibly disproportionate impact of nuclear weapons. And I don't think that it's something that as a species we should be proud of, creating this giant mousetrap and holding it over another country and using it to establish global military hegemony in these giant superpowers. I don't think that's, and to me, that's not a morally acceptable path for humanity. And I would hope that more people will look into the nature of nuclear weapons and their history, and the history of their development, and the history of the economics behind their development, and will join Oregon PSR and our coalition partners in working to get rid of these weapons.
Talking about what people can do to try to reduce the number of weapons, or even just, if we could eliminate these weapons at all. We could talk all day about the history, but we can try to talk about how we move forward. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to More Talk Radio here on Cable Community Radio, and I'm speaking with Shantini about tomorrow's event that Oregon PSR, the Physician for Social Responsibility, are having at the Japanese American Historical Plaza. Well, they'll be talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons, and that's from 6 to 7 p.m. So tomorrow you'll be having some guest speakers. Can you talk about who is in your lineup tomorrow?
Yes, thank you for asking that. We have a really great lineup tomorrow. And what we wanted to do this year, again, we have this annual event, usually around August 6th, which is the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. August 9th, a few days later, is the Nagasaki anniversary. So we wanted to bring in people who have a real firsthand personal story of nuclear weapons. So one of our speakers is Michiko Kornhauser. Michiko is an Hibakusha. A Hibakusha is a survivor of the atomic bombing. So Michiko lived in the area around Hiroshima during the bombing. So she's going to talk a bit about her sort of firsthand experience of what it meant. Again, most of the people at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, women and children, most of them were innocent. They had nothing to do with the war. They just happened to live in the wrong place at the wrong time when the U.S. wanted to show off its new military technology. So she's going to talk a bit about that, the impact that the bombing had on her family and her history, and how that really changed her life and was really an essential part of her, you know, her life story, is being near these bombs and seeing her family and friends, you know, obliterated or die from cancer in the years afterwards. We also have Patricia Hoover. Patricia is a Hanford downwinder, so she's somebody who lived in the area around the Hanford Nuclear Reservation out in Richland, Washington, and suffered some really severe health impacts as a result of exposure to the radiation and the toxic heavy metals from that site. I think it's interesting to me, a lot of Oregonians, and I didn't know for a while, even living in Oregon, about Hanford and the impact of Hanford. They call it the most contaminated site in the Western Hemisphere. It's the largest and most expensive environmental cleanup project in the world. A lot of taxpayers' dollars going in there to clean up this place. And again, because of the nature of ionizing radiation, it has this incredibly disproportionate impact on women and children in that area. A lot of the Hanford downwinders are women and children, or were children. Of course, the area around Hanford was traditionally indigenous lands. There were native lands. There were white farmers also living in the area who were also kicked off their lands when the Department of Energy commandeered this space to work on the nuclear weapons program. Patricia is going to talk a little bit about the health impacts. So kind of tying it together of looking at the impact of the use of nuclear weapons in Japan on one end and the sort of really negative impacts that being near Hanford has on people here in the Pacific Northwest. So really tying together the use of weapons in Japan and the production of weapons here. And what we see, the one commonality is radiation poisoning. It's cancer, it's death, it's reproductive disorders, it's heart disease. It's neurological disorders. That's what nuclear weapons do. They kill people. They hurt people. And I think it's incumbent upon anyone who understands what these weapons do and understand the grueling, grinding death that exposure to this sort of radiation causes. Once you understand this stuff, how can you not do everything in your power to try to save humanity from this horrible thing that we've invented?
We're coming up on our last few minutes, so we'll take Laura, our next caller. Laura, are you there?
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Laura. What's on your mind? Laura, are you there? I think we're missing Laura this morning. Laura, give us a call back. Sean, I want to know, you've been doing this work for many years now. What gives you hope to continue doing this work?
Well, you know, a lot of things really do. I mean, I think at the most basic level, I understand that these things have the very real possibility of wiping out human life. And as much as I'm sometimes discontented with the way things are nowadays, I want to see humanity thrive. I want to see us get back on a right course, start taking care of each other, stop threatening to wipe each other out in the fires of nuclear Armageddon. And I think we have the capacity to do that. I think we need, the moral leadership to do that. So these weapons don't produce themselves. Countries don't just out of the blue say, I want a nuclear weapon. It's people making decisions. So people decide to produce nuclear weapons. People make money off of nuclear weapons, which is a big part of why nuclear weapons production is still extant to these days. These weapons wouldn't be making themselves if somebody weren't making a bunch of money off of them. I think what gives me hope is the basic reality that, like, it's either this or death by radiation sickness. So there's that basic kind of understanding. And also, I see this huge fluorescence of people who care about this issue. Like this, I've been organizing or sort of taking the lead role in organizing this event for the last 7 or 8 years. And so I see hundreds of people come out, you know, to learn about nuclear weapons, to talk about nuclear weapons, to get involved. Our organization has seen tremendous support from our community. Most people don't want nuclear weapons, and they understand that these weapons aren't going to get rid of themselves. You have to do something about them. You have to engage. You have to organize. In the same way you organize for any right, for civil rights, for human rights, we have to organize for the human right to live without the shadow of nuclear weapons hanging over our head. And so to see people get together, organize, to see political leaders put forth legislation, like some here in Oregon, Earl Blumenauer, and particularly Ed Markey out in Massachusetts, who are putting forth legislation to cut fundings for these new weapon systems, to try to pull back from this idea of spending $1.3 trillion over the next 10 years. And that's another side of it that I'd like to just briefly, you know, allude to, is if we're spending $1.3 trillion over the next 10 years to upgrade our nuclear arsenal, what could we do with $1.3 trillion? How many people could we provide good, affordable health care to? How many people could we provide a good, free education to? How much could we rebuild our infrastructure and really make America a much better country with $1.3 trillion that, again, that money only imperils humanity. It imperils us. It imperils our so-called enemies around the globe. It creates new enemies because it creates fear and uncertainty. And if you're afraid and uncertain, then yeah, you want to react to that in the same way that, you know, if you're afraid that everybody's got a gun, you might think, oh, I should get a gun because everybody else has one. And it's fear. And we have to have a new way forward that's not based in fear, that's not based in the willingness to wipe out somebody's entire country or wipe out entire cities because their military or political leaders made decisions that threaten us. Again, these weapons aren't used for battle. They're not used for war. They're used for cities. They're used for civilian population centers. That's what they're designed to do. So what gives me hope is knowing that a lot of people care about these issues and, you know, are willing to speak up and speak out about them. And that gives me hope going forward.
And something you had shared with me before off air is that how the statistics of who actually supports nuclear weapons, that, you know, the vast majority of humans don't.
Right. The vast majority of people don't support nuclear weapons. There's a really clear demographic breakdown on this as well. And one of the only demographics that most of the demographics supports nuclear weapons are white males. And I think that ties into a lot of issues with nuclear weapons. They're sort of inherently genocidal capabilities, and the fact that most of the people who are making money on nuclear weapons are white investors, white men, male investors for the most part. And again, I'm not trying to make this clear, like, I'm not trying to cut all these clear lines and saying, oh, it's only white men that are doing this. It's only white men who support them. That's not true. But there is a very clear disproportionate impact both in the use of the weapons, the testing of the weapons, who supports them, who is actually working for their abolition, which tends to be more women and people of color for the most part, proportionately. So I think it's important to kind of look at that too, of like, yes, these have a disproportionate impact on women and children of people of color, and the people who support them. There's also a disproportionate support among people who are not women, children, or people of color.
Well, you've been listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. Just want to let you know to tune in at 9 a.m. when the Olmo Variety Hour comes on. They'll be burrowing down to the roots and great issues of our time. I'd like to thank Sean Tinney from the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility for coming in this morning to talk about their event. That's tomorrow, August 6th, from 6 to 7 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza that's at the Portland waterfront at Northwest and NATO Parkway and Cooch Street. Once again, they'll be talking about the unequal impacts of nuclear weapons and also memorializing the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Sean, let's give you the last word.
Well, I just want to say thanks so much for having me on today, giving me a bit of time and space to talk about these issues and to promote our event tomorrow, which we hope to see as many people who can make it out tomorrow to learn about these disproportionate impacts and to take some action around nuclear weapons. Thanks to the callers. I know we might not necessarily see eye to eye on all these issues, but I appreciate your interest and I appreciate you calling in and taking a bit of time out of your morning to talk about these issues. And again, I don't think it's always necessarily that we have to agree, but I appreciate the civil dialogue around this. And I just do encourage people to take a long, hard thought about nuclear weapons. Is this something that you want to see humanity continue for another 74 years to live under the shadow of this threat of waking up one day to a blinding flash of light, and that being the last thing you see before your skin melts off and you slowly die from radiation poisoning. Is that the world that's acceptable to you, or do you envision a better world? And if you envision a better world, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to make that better world a reality? And how are you going to make that happen? And I'd like you to think about that in a really specific and tangible and tactical way. How do we create a world that's free of these nuclear weapons? And I hope everyone will think more about that. And I hope you'll join us tomorrow at the Japanese American Historical Plaza around 6 o'clock to learn more.
And if people can't join you tomorrow, where can they learn more about the work that Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility is doing?
Yeah, so they can definitely visit our website. It's www.oregonpsr.org. That's PSR for Physicians for Social Responsibility. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We are planning to do a Facebook live feed of the event tomorrow. So if you're not able to be there in person, you can check out our website and actually see video of the event and hear some of the speakers tomorrow, and we hope if you can't join us in person that you'll do that.
Thank you, Sean Tinney from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. For KBOO Community Radio, More Talk Radio, I'm Jenna Yokoyama. Cecil and Celeste will be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
This is a little piece of time. Oh Lord, don't drop that atomic bomb on me.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll screen Power of Community, How Cuba Survived Peak Oil on Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1990, Cuba's oil supply was cut by more than half. This film tells of the hardships and struggles, as well as the community and creativity of the Cuban people during this transition away from a highly mechanized agricultural system to one using organic methods of farming and local urban gardens. Again, that's How Cuba Survived Peak Oil, Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Community.